Thursday edition of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you, producing tonight's show. Julio Sanchez, we're going to be with you for the next 2 hours tonight, where we're going to run down everything Royals spring training. We're going to talk about, of course, the aftermath that is this week with the Chiefs having lost Super Bowl 59 last Sunday.
Do you have to?
I mean, we're not going to get too in-depth on it by any means, but, you know, some roster moves to be had, some news coming out regarding Travis Kelce, some beef coming out regarding Jason Kelce, which I'll kind of get into here a little bit. Yeah, apparently, Jason Kelce and Tom Brady going at it a little bit right now in regards to Travis and a certain relationship that Travis is in, which I find quite interesting. So we'll see, man. A lot to get to, though. We've got national news, of course. You know, the big news surrounding Aaron Rodgers today and what's going on with the New York Jets. A former Chiefs player is in the news for all the wrong reasons. And a big-time lawsuit for anybody who is a fan of college-based streaming shows. I feel like that's a weird way to word that, but you'll understand it when we get to it a little bit later on tonight. No guests lined up, so it's just Julio and I here for the next couple of hours, bringing you everything that we have for tonight. Let's start things out in Sunrise, Arizona. Spring training, Cactus League baseball, about a week away, folks. I mean, it's really going to be here before you know it. February 21st, Royals versus the Texas Rangers. That's a 2:05 first pitch. That game is going to be broadcast right here on 96.5 The Fan, kicking off Royals baseball season in style right here at Odyssey. Going to be excited to see which one this will end up, you know, how this season goes, right? I think everybody is kind of waiting around with bated breath because of what happened last season, a year that nobody saw coming. And now the expectation is that, right? I mean, the expectation is that the Royals put themselves back into contention and they make the playoffs and they have an opportunity to knock on the door of an ALCS or a World Series, right? I mean, maybe even take that step forward and get from the ALDS to the ALCS for the first time since 2015. It would be a full-blown decade since the last time that happened. And I think they've got the right pieces in place to make some of those things happen. Of course, you start with Bobby Witt Jr., the absolute superstar that he is. It's mind-boggling to think about because it hasn't happened very often. But he's, you know, got back-to-back 30-30 seasons in the last 2 years of his very short three-year career so far and has ample opportunity to do the same thing again this year. I think, you know, Salvador Perez coming back once again after he put together another really impressive year for himself is exciting. Having the top three of that pitching rotation with Waka and Lugo and Cole Reagan's back is exciting. But there's also some parts of this team that you rightfully so may have questions about, right? Is MJ Melendez finally going to take that next step? Is he going to go from your run-of-the-mill, below-average outfielder that nobody will remember 5 years from now? Or does he become that guy who ends up kind of taking that fifth spot in the order and runs with it for a while? This is kind of his put-up-or-shut-up season for a lot of Royals fans. Some Royals fans were out on him even now, right? They didn't want him back after last season ended.
Count me in that basket. Yeah.
Okay, put you in that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. If that's what we're relying on, I think we might be in trouble.
And I respect that from you.
We've seen all we need to see, I think, at this point, you know?
He's made some changes, right, that you can kind of be intrigued by. He's changed his stance. He's changed his, you know, his batting approach at the plate. It's a lot more closed off versus that very open stance that he had prior. It's a shorter kick step, shorter delivery. We'll see if that can, you know, bring some more.
I feel like you're really trying to sell me on this.
Yeah, I'm not trying to sell you. I'm more trying to sell myself a little bit.
I mean, look, the fact that he had to have made all of these adjustments to try and just fit in. I mean, you know,
you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Just saying.
I'm trying to give the man the benefit of the doubt and not even so much him. I'm trying to give Matt Quatrero and JJ Piccolo and that coaching staff and that in the front office a little bit more credit because they've done such an outstanding job with a lot of these other pieces. I mean, going out and getting Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha last offseason when they had never put up those kinds of numbers in their careers, and you bring them to Kansas City and they do the things that they do. Cole Reagans, you know, the trade for him mid-season, you deal off Aroldis Chapman and you're like, okay, who's this Cole Reagans guy? He's had some injury issues. You know, what is he actually? What is he? Well, he's an all-star. And they still have many, many years of service under their belt with him. They went and got Lucas Ersig at the deadline last year, and that became a revelation for this team. So, I don't know. I think that if the coaching staff and this front office, this organization, those that make decisions have a belief in him, who am I to say that they're wrong in that situation? So I'm hopeful that because they have to see something. There's got to be something there in the day-to-day approach, in the batting sessions and BP and all those sorts of things that make them believe that MJ Melendez can be an everyday guy for them. Have we seen it yet as the fan, as the consumer? Not really. We've seen flashes of it. I mean, admittedly, he was the best hitter on the field for the Royals in that ALDS against the Yankees. Would you agree?
Yeah. Can I play devil's advocate here, though?
Yes, please.
So that may be the case, or it could be the case that the better bats or positional players out there right now are too far out of price range. We can't afford them. Those that we can afford aren't marginally better, that much better than what he is. So kind of, you know, deal with what you know, as opposed to why bring someone in that you don't know and really doesn't have, you know, the ceiling that maybe a higher price player would have. So you're just kind of, it's just patchworking. You're just dealing with it.
Yeah, I think there's some of that, you know? For sure. It's funny. I'd been talking about it for weeks that I thought, oh, Anthony Santander would be such a good fit for this lineup, but the Royals would never go after him. And I remember a couple of weeks ago, I filled in on a Friday for CDOT, for Carrington. I was hosting The Drive with Rob, and we were talking about that. And I had mentioned how much I would have loved Anthony Santander in this lineup. And then not even an hour after the show ended that night, the article came out that the Royals had offered him a deal, but it was not enough, right? The Blue Jays blew him away with their offer, and the Royals stood little to no chance in that regard. And I think that you're right on some of that, you know, along those lines of the upper echelon guys the Royals couldn't afford or didn't want to afford to go get some of those guys. And so you're kind of left with the pieces that are at your disposal. And MJ Melendez is one of those pieces. Right now, I think Santander was likely a signing for right field, not necessarily left field. So I don't know if that would have had much bearing on Melendez and his ability in left field. But it is interesting that's how that whole thing, how that whole situation turned out. And it does kind of coincide with what you're saying about the Royals just don't have the horses or haven't been able to afford the horses to put a guy like MJ Melendez out of a job yet. This is kind of, this is the last chance for him.
Yep.
And I don't even want to say this is the last season that he has as an opportunity. He might have until June or July to kind of put up or shut up in this.
And that's kind of, to be the optimist on part of this and not so pessimistic about it is, you know, maybe their approach is going to be something to the effect of, let's patchwork it till we get through midseason, kind of towards that trade deadline, and then maybe someone that we can more afford kind of falls into our lap in that situation just to right the ship a little bit. So, you know, trade deadline comes, you know, they made some big moves last year, some good solid moves, so maybe they can do that again this year, you know?
And again, I'm not sitting here, and I don't believe you are either, Julio, advocating for MJ Melendez to all of a sudden become a guy who's hitting 280, 290, right, 300 with 30 homers and 100 RBIs. I would love to see MJ Melendez be that number five guy in the order, right? That guy who hits 250, 260. He's got an on-base percentage at,
serviceable,
you know, 330, 340. He's hitting between 20 and 25 home runs. He's driving in between 75 and 85 runs. You know, maybe those RBIs might be ballooned a little bit because if he's hitting fifth, then you have to imagine with Salvi and Vinny and Bobby and Jonathan India hitting leadoff that he's going to benefit greatly in terms of his RBIs from having those four, you know, great players hitting ahead of him. But that's all I'm asking for. I'm not asking for MJ Melendez to be an Alex Gordon level fielder. I'm not asking for MJ Melendez to be an all-star caliber hitter or an all-star caliber player. I want the man to be serviceable. I want to look at left field every day and not be like, oh, great, there's three outs on a day-by-day-by-day basis.
It's fair. I think that's fair.
And I mean, two seasons ago in 2023, he hit 235 that year. He had an on-base percentage of about 315. He hit 16 homers and drove in 56 runs. Is that where we want? No. Especially the 170 strikeouts that occurred during that.
That seems like you're setting the bar a little low.
It's a little bit, but I would like something a little bit closer to that 235 with a 316 OBP than the 206 and 273 that we saw last season. I mean, he struck out less. I'll give him credit for that. He struck out only 113 times instead of 170, but he had about 150 less at-bats. So that's kind of a benefit for him there a little bit, right? I don't know. I want him to be a little bit better than that. I want to be a little bit better than that. That's all I want. And, you know, we look at this lineup, and I think a lot of people are very intrigued by the possibility of Jonathan India. I've got Dan and KCK says that he's expecting big things from Jonathan India. Another 816 here in our text line. Again, our numbers, 913-586-7965. If you want to give us a message there on our text line, you can call in via that same number if you'd like as well. And this 816 says, okay, guys, I'm a baseball stat savant. Wow. Humble brag. I like it. Here you go. 2024 Royals. Our leadoff hitter might have cost us a pennant. Leadoff on base percentage was at 27%, which was the worst in baseball by far. Bobby Witt Jr., 433 plate appearances with no one on base, which is the most since 2004. Bobby hit 388 with runners in scoring position. So
that's a hell of a text, woo. I got to say, you know?
All right. So, yeah, when your leadoff batter gets on base 27% of the time and the guy hitting behind him is 388 with runners on.
It's not good. It's not good.
You really need that guy to get on base a little bit good. More. Yeah, and that's, you know, the guy that was hitting leadoff for a lot of last season was Mikel Garcia. The reports are now that he's going to basically turn into a platoon in center field, which is kind of an interesting dynamic with him and Kyle Isbell, because Isbell doesn't hit very well against lefties and Garcia doesn't hit very well against righties. So they'll both kind of be back there. They're outside of maybe Bobby Witt Jr., probably the two most athletic players that the Royals have. Both of them are pretty, you know, good gloves, solid arm strength, right? They're good center field sort of guys. Unfortunately, they just don't hit the ball very well. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think for my money, the thing that I'm most interested to see, can Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha replicate?
Agreed.
That is a massive, massive question for this Royals team.
Or was it lightning in a bottle?
Exactly. Was it a one-year wonder situation, or is this something that is truly tangible, right? Because Lugo's 35 years old. He coming off of the best season of his career. Although, you know, in 2023, when he was pitching for the Padres, he was 8-7 with a 3.57 ERA in 26 starts. So that's still a fairly good number, right? 3.57 is not something to shake a stick at. He had a 3.6 ERA in 2022 and a 3.5 ERA in 2021. But those two seasons, he was a relief pitcher. And for Michael Wacha, he has had some good years. He has been a starter his entire career, dating back to his time with the St. Louis Cardinals. He's been an all-star at points of his career. And he came off a season with the Boston Red Sox where he was 11-2 with a 3.32 ERA. He was 14-4 with a 3.22 ERA with the Padres in 2023. So this is a guy that doesn't appear to be a one-off wonder. But again, Lugo's 35. Waka is 33 at this point. I mean, it's these guys aren't getting any younger. So there is always going to be a concern with that. And that concern lies in the same way is the fact that, you know, Salvador Perez is a year older.
You know,
and nobody
you're
wants
you're not really selling me here. You know, I'm not feeling the optimism out of you right now. And that's coming from somebody who was just being the pessimistic one.
You know,
like, I need you to like bring the energy up. Like, give us something positive here, you know?
I'm being positive in the fact that I don't think that what Lugo and Waka did last year is this random one-off, yet like you said, it got light struck, you know, lightning in a bottle sort of thing. I think that these guys have proven in their past that they can be reliable everyday starters. I love the fact that neither one of them has to be a number one either, because you've got Cole Reagans as your ace.
There we go.
To have Seth Lugo as your number two and a Michael Waka as your number three, and then a Michael Lorenzen as your four. I think that is a very, very reliable 1-4. What they do with the 5 spot is going to be fascinating, because Kyle Wright is beginning rehab, right? He could be back by the time the season starts. I'm not entirely sure on that. Is he your guy, right? You made a move with the Braves to bring him in a couple of years ago. You were so high on him. The Braves were high on him at the time when he was traded within the organization. You've always been high on Chris Bubich. Is that the answer? Is that the guy you go to? Or do you put Bubich back in the bullpen, at which he was very, very effective in limited innings pitch last year? We'll see what happens. Somebody says, I pray that Jonathan India is the answer at leadoff. And me and everybody else.
Yeah.
No question about it. We got a few more stories on the Kansas City Royals I want to get to here throughout the show. We've got some Chiefs news at the same time. We'll talk about all of that over the course of the next 2 hours with you till 9 o'clock. This is After Hours with Logan Weber and Julio Sanchez on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
I'm gonna take my horse to the hotel room. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back.
Talking Royals baseball to get things kicked off tonight on After Hours. Logan Weber here with you. Julio Sanchez is alongside. Our number, 913-586-7965. Appreciate you guys tuning in via the 96.5 FM signal or the Odyssey app. If you don't have it, you want to be able to listen to the show anywhere you go, just go to your app store, iPhone or Android, and search Odyssey. You can download the Odyssey app and listen to all of our shows live. Go back and listen to our podcasts or our chapters section, where you can find clips and segments specifically catered to your needs. Whether you want to hear Royals talk, Chiefs talk, whatever it might be, you can find it right there on the chapters page. As I said, talking Royals baseball, talking spring training, expectations leading into the year. We've had some positives, we've had some negatives, we've been optimistic, pessimistic, but I have to say, I think this Jonathan India move that we made during the offseason, or that the Royals made during the offseason, is a very, very intriguing one. One that could be certainly worthwhile for this team as a leadoff hitter, because it's, you know, with your leadoff hitter, it was mentioned earlier via Raj in the Ozarks. Shout out to Raj, talking about those numbers, right? The Royals were the worst in baseball in leadoff hitters getting on base. Leadoff on base at 27%, which was the worst in the MLB last year. Bobby Witt Jr., who hit second, hit .388 with runners on. Jonathan India gets on base. And I say that, he gets on base to the tune of being fifth in the MLB last season in walks. Drew 80 of them, right? He only hit .248, .249 last season, but he had an on-base percentage of nearly .360. He drew 80 walks to 125 strikeouts. Does he generate a lot of pop? No. Do you need a leadoff hitter to generate pop? Absolutely not. It would be foolish to have your leadoff hitter have 40 bombs. That makes absolutely no sense strategically to the game of baseball. Now, if 2 through 9 also have 40 bombs, okay, I get it. But your leadoff hitter should not be hitting for that much power. He should be hitting somewhere further down the order where he has an opportunity to do so with runners on base. So I like where Jonathan India fits in this lineup, being able to hit leadoff, Bobby hitting behind him, Vinny behind him, and Salvi behind him. That's as strong a 1 through 4 as I think you're going to find across Major League Baseball outside of the Dodgers and Yankees, who just seem to be printing money inside their organizations nowadays. So I like the way that that fits. You know, that's not the only offseason move that the Royals have made. This one actually came earlier this week, and as I'm sure many of you already know about, the Royals bring Ned Yost back. That was announced yesterday. So yeah, for those who hadn't heard anything yet, Ned Yost has been hired back by the Kansas City Royals as a senior advisor to the general manager. His precise role, what his duties will be day to day, I don't have an incredible amount of detail on, but the reasoning behind how this whole situation started, I find quite enjoyable. So the reason why Ned Yost felt the need to come back, as he describes it, and I read this courtesy of Ann Rogers at MLB.com, anxiety. He said, watching the Royals last season, right, during the season it was fun, right? For the last 10 years, he hasn't really had a problem watching the Royals, or maybe not the last 10 years, but of course, since his time in Kansas City had ended, he hadn't had much trouble just like sitting down and being able to enjoy a Royals game. But he said when it got to the postseason, and specifically that ALDS series against the Yankees, he said, I finally understood what it was like to be a fan. He said, God, this is what fans feel, right? The amount of anxiety and how anxious he was, you know, just how into the game he got, right? He's like, I was going about my retired life. I was loving it. He's like, but when they got into the playoffs, everything changed. He said he was pulling so hard for the Royals at the end of these games in the ALDS against New York that he'd, quote, have to go stand in the shower for a half hour just trying to calm down.
It's a little too much information, but thank you.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't think the shower was necessary. Just
probably
like
needed to be shared, but
just needed to go cool down, calm down for a half hour. Was it a cold shower you were taking, Ned?
I hope.
I don't want to go into further
details. Too many details.
Yeah. Yeah. Too many details. He said Yost didn't want to feel that again, and he also knew he could help the Royals take the next step. That's when he got a hold of JJ Piccolo, and that's how this whole thing came to be as a senior advisor to the general manager. I mean, it's an interesting one, right? I mean, I feel like, of course, when the runs were happening in 14 and 15, everybody loved him, right? Every Royals fan was a huge Ned Yost fan. And then the offseason of 2015 and 2016 happened, and everybody was gone. You know, Zobrist was let go, and Moose left, and Hosmer left, and Alcides left, and Lokane left, and other guys were traded away or outright released or retired, and you were basically left with Alex Gordon. And you were immediately back to losing 100 games every year. And people quickly turned on Ned Yost. But it's funny how time heals all wounds, right? Because 6, 7, 8 years later, we're all like, oh, Ned Yost is coming back. This is awesome. And it is awesome, I have to say, because as hard as this is to say, right, JJ Piccolo, as good a job as he's ever done, hasn't reached the mountaintop. Matt Quatrero, as good a job as he's done, never reached the mountaintop. Bobby Witt Jr., Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, Cole Reagans. Outside of Salvador Perez, nobody on this team and nobody in this organization knows what it feels like, what it means, and what it takes to reach the highest heights of Major League Baseball. Salvi knows what all that means. Ned Yost knows what it means. And he knows what it means at a managerial level, right? At a front office sort of level versus Salvi, who knows what it takes as a player. So to have those two guys in these roles in similar situations of leadership to kind of guide for Salvi to be able to guide players like Bobby Witt Jr. And you know, MJ Melendez to some extent, Jonathan India now that he's arrived, and Cole Reagans, guys like that. Now that he's there to guide them as players, you've now got Ned Yost in the front office to be able to guide JJ and Matt Quatrero and the other people in the front office and along the managerial staff, I think is very, very interesting.
It's positive. I think it's a positive. And look, you couldn't blame Ned for leaving. Like, some of those decisions the organization made at that time, probably, I mean, looking back on it, hindsight's 20/20, say if you want. I, for one, didn't like many of those moves as they were happening. But, you know, you can't blame him for the roster that they were giving him. I mean, that was just, what did you expect when you trade that many pieces away, and or whatever the case may be. Bottom line is, I'm glad he is back, right? Mm-hmm. He brings a lot of knowledge, baseball knowledge, to the game. It's smart on his part coming back to now a completely different organization, an organization that now thinks outside the box, more creative, kind of like the way they were going in up into the 2013, 14, 15 seasons, where they were thinking outside the box, putting things together, kind of. So good for him. Great timing on his part, right? I mean,
yeah, I'm sure Ned Yost has to feel that how much of a benefit it would have been for him to have John Sherman as the owner when right. he was the manager versus the Glass family, because we've already seen, and this is no disrespect to David Glass and what the ownership of the group of the Royals did previously, because they won a World Series. They got to two of them. But I think that John Sherman has already proven a much greater willingness to spend the money, to go out and make things happen. I mean, I know we were talking earlier about the Blue Jays outbidding the Royals for Anthony Santander. They were still willing to pay Santander over $20 million a year. To offer a free agent over $20 million per year on a deal is something that David Glass and the Glass family, we could have never pictured them doing. And for him to go do that, along with the massive extension that he gave Bobby Witt Jr., the largest by a country mile in terms of the franchise's history. So I'm intrigued by that, too, because, again, we talked about how there's not a lot of people within this organization that know what it takes to win a World Series. The ownership of this team is different than what they had 10 years ago when they won a World Series. So I think it's very beneficial, top to bottom, to have a guy like Ned Yost in this organization. Somebody's cracking jokes. 913 says, is Yost's role similar to the assistant to the traveling secretary? And no, I think it might be a little bit more detailed than that, I have to imagine.
Maybe. Maybe not. You know?
I don't know. If he's just making travel plans, then so be it, I guess. But something tells me he's going to be a little bit more involved than the guy that's just
got
like
bored on the farm, you know?
Yeah, man. He just couldn't sit in retirement anymore, I guess. He's out here taking 30-minute showers. Whatever that means. Oh, well, a lot of news coming out about the Kansas City Chiefs over the last couple of days, some of which is interesting. We'll talk about some of this stuff on the other side. A lot of national news, NFL-wise, college basketball-wise. I'll tell you, we got a team here in the state of Missouri that is going to be playing in March. And I'll tell you who that is coming up here in just a little bit. This is After Hours with Logan Weber and Julio Sanchez on your home for Kansas City sports. It's 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
You know I'm back. Big time offseason incoming for the Kansas City Chiefs. Oh, are we going to talk about what happened on Sunday? God, no. No, we're over it. We're past that.
Thank you.
It happened. We move on. Now we look ahead to what the next few months could hold for the Kansas City Chiefs. 28 players on this Chiefs team are impending free agents of some sort. whether that's restricted free agents, unrestricted free agents, or exclusive rights free agents. And it's going to be interesting to see who gets brought back and who's allowed to go. So that would be fascinating. That'll be fascinating to see. One of those moves revolves around, of course, Travis Kelce and what he could potentially do. I will urge you, don't go on Google and search it, because the amount, I mean, I read four stories today that came from, you know, insiders say Travis leaning towards retirement. I then read five stories that said insiders say Travis wants to play for five more years. Everybody is full of bleep. The only people who know are Travis and maybe those extremely close to Travis.
He doesn't even seem to know.
Right? Yeah. I mean, honestly, like Mama and Papa Kelce might know. Jason might know, right? Taylor might know, but the rest of us don't, right? We can hope. We can talk to people who think they know. Somebody just said, do you think Kelce will retire?
It's pure speculation.
I don't know. It is absolutely unfounded, irresponsible speculation. But I'll give you my prediction. No, I don't think he does. And I'll get more into that later. Interestingly, though, and this is something that we all kind of saw coming, right? In the NFL, for a player to collect their roster bonus, they have to be on the roster March 1st. But with a player like Travis, who is, you know, the thought of retirement looming, it can get pushed back. And that is what the Kansas City Chiefs have elected to do. They've pushed back the deadline on Travis Kelce's decision for the roster bonus to March the 14th, meaning he has a month from tomorrow to decide if he wants to come back for another season and play for the Kansas City Chiefs, because he does have 1 year left on that 2 year extension that he signed, $36.5 million, I believe it was, last offseason. Does he do that? I don't know. I'm of the belief that he will, but, you know, stranger things have happened. If he decides to move on and go about his life beyond football, then so be it. But I find it interesting that they have pushed back that decision for him a couple of weeks, and that tells me, like you were just saying, Julio, I'm not sure he even knows, right? He might be leaning one way more so than the other, but he isn't definitive that he's coming back or if he's retiring. I don't know. I think it's going to be fun. Yeah. Do you think Travis Kelce will retire? I don't think so, but please don't flog me in the streets if I'm wrong. That's all I ask. 913-586-7965 is our number. How about that Bobby baseball? Yeah. I'm excited to watch what Bobby can do this year, because I don't want to speak too incredibly out of turn, but I feel like we see a lot of voter fatigue with MVP nowadays. Like, there's no way Aaron Judge can win it 3 years in a row. I just don't see a way. And
I don't know. There's a lot of Yankees fans out there.
I understand.
You know?
But if voter fatigue is a factor, and that takes Judge out of the equation, I'm not sure there's another player in the American League that I could point to that stands a better chance of winning MVP this year than Bobby Witt Jr. I really don't. I mean, right, they say that a player only gets better as their career progresses up to a certain point, right? Up until they reach the threshold or their peak or whatever, from ages 27 to 31, somewhere in there is considered your athletic peak. Dude was 23 years old last year, hitting .332 with 32 home runs and 109 RBIs. And he stole 31 bases. 211 hits. 23, 24 years old. So if that's not the peak of his powers, who's to say he can't have a better year this year? If he has a better year this year, he's the MVP of the American League. And I feel very comfortable in predicting that Bobby Witt Jr. will be the MVP of the American League. That might be outrageous for some, but that is the belief that I hold and how much faith I have in him. And it's remarkable what he's done already in his career, man. I mean, to hit .332 last year, 32 homers, 31 stolen bases, after putting up a 30 home run, 49 stolen base the year prior, is, I mean, it's insane. It's absolutely insane to think about. Also insane to think about the fact that he's going to be here for a very, very long time. As somebody in the text line earlier said, David Glass is rolling in his grave over that extension. David Glass was very fiscally conservative in his approach as the chairman and CEO of the Royals. I think that's fair to say. But I think the Royals faithful, us as fans, us who cover the team, are benefiting greatly from the fact that Bobby Witt Jr. will be around for a very, very, very long time. Again, our number, 913-586-7965. I got a 417 here who was asking in the text line earlier if I'm from Springfield. I am not. I just recently moved back to the Kansas City area. This is where I grew up. But after I graduated from college, I went to Northwest Missouri State, graduated in 2020. I moved down to Springfield because my then fiance, my now wife, was going to school at Missouri State. And so when I graduated from school, I moved down there so that she could finish up her undergrad. And then ultimately she went to grad school down there too. And I had a chance to work down in there for about 4 years at Zimmer Communications down in Springfield. This person says, nice, welcome back to the area. I moved to KC from Springfield in 2020. Did you work with Art Haynes or on a different station? I did work with Art. Worked with Art for a couple of years. I occasionally would produce the show that he hosted Monday through Friday. It was called Sports Talk. He hosted with a good friend of mine, Wyatt Wheeler, who writes for the Springfield News Leader down there in the Ozarks. And then when Art unfortunately contracted West Nile virus and was in the hospital and, you know, had all the his health situation that he was going through, I was given the opportunity to kind of step into that role and host his show, Sports Talk. So I did that for a couple of years before moving back up to this area. Art is a very good friend of mine. Art is a tremendous mentor of mine as well. He is one of my biggest advocates in this business, and I love that man to death and am eternally grateful to what Art was able to provide for me. And of course, you guys are used to hearing Art because he does pre and post game for the Kansas City Chiefs here on 96.5 The Fan. Coming up, a story about a beef with Jason Kelce and Tom Brady. This is a weird one. We'll talk about it when we come back. This is After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Nice little story by Clyde Edwards-Alaire here. I just caught this on Twitter. The New Orleans Saints are re-signing him to another one-year deal. So he'll be back with the Saints for the 2025 season. And like I said, I'm excited to see that. He's been through so much in his career, you know, most of it off the field, unfortunately. But it's good to see that there are still those in the league that have faith in his ability, a former first-round pick, right? It just didn't work out in Kansas City with what they had going on. They needed immediate help, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire wasn't in a position to be able to provide that through very little fault of his own, I would say, along those lines. But for New Orleans to continue to try to give him a chance, I think is great. Of course, you know, he's born and raised in Louisiana. Baton Rouge
kid. Going back home. Good for him.
I think it's good for him to be in an area of familiarity for him to try to get his career back on track. I think that's fantastic. As we close out hour one here, this is a weird story. So I want to start out by prefacing.
I love it.
This story comes from beautyidol.boonovel.com.
So credible.
Whatever the hell that is. So here's this. And I saw this on Twitter before, and then I was like trying to find a news article about it. This was the only one I could find. But according to this story, and again, take it with a grain of salt. I'm not sitting here trying to say that beautyidol.whatever is as reputable a source as the Associated Press or wherever.
Where I go for my daily news.
Yeah, I guess so. Wherever you get your news from. But according to this article, Jason Kelce and Tom Brady had a little tete-a-tete, I guess is how I would say it, during a roast, apparently. I don't know who the roast was for. I don't know where the roast was at. That is not specified in the article, which, again, goes right back to the how reputable this article
is. Can't give
is.
All the details away, you know?
But it is funny. If it's true, it's a funny article. That a during a roast at which apparently Brady and Kelce were at, or at least Brady was at, the 7-time Super Bowl champion quarterback made a joke about Travis Kelce, remarking that, quote, if Travis had focused more on football than on Taylor Swift, maybe that three-peat would have been a success, unquote. Interesting. Okay, Tom. You know, in terms of a roast, trying to poke fun, you know? And make humorous remarks, I get it. If Travis would have been there, I feel like that hits better. But if Travis isn't in attendance, I don't know. It just doesn't.
Who is this roast for? Who's getting roasted? Because context would help as well.
That's what I'm saying.
Taking a shot in the dark at.
If you're making this at a roast in which Travis is not there, like if he's not one of the presenters or the person being roasted or even in the crowd
or helping roast,
then what is it? What is it for? Well, in a typical fashion, as somebody who is an older brother, I am the oldest of three in my family. I have a younger brother.
Same here.
Your younger brother is at times your worst enemy in the world, right? I mean, I don't know about you, Julio. I won't speak for you, but I'll speak for me. My brother and I hated each other until I was about 19 years old, until I had gone away to college for about a year and come back home and realized, you know, he's an idiot, but he's not that bad, right? I mean, like, things could always be worse. It's during that period of life where you, like, leave home for the first time and you come back and you realize, number one, unfortunately for all of us, our parents were right about everything, which sucks. You hate to admit that, but you're like, damn it, they were. Yeah, okay. I'm an idiot. I don't know anything. My mom and dad were right about everything. And you move on from there. And then the second thing is that your brother and your siblings don't suck as bad as you thought they did. So Jason goes full-blown older brother. And I say all this to say that, like, you know, my brother and I did not get along. But if there was ever a situation where somebody was trying to get into a confrontation with me or somebody was trying to get into a confrontation with my brother, all of that seemed to go away and you came to the defense of the other. My brother and I got kicked out of summer school one time because this kid and I got into it and my brother came across the basketball court and punches were thrown. Just the way it goes.
All right.
And then we would go home and we would end up in a fist fight in the living room because we hated each other. It's just the nature of the beast sometimes. But Jason goes right back at Tom, apparently. So this was his response to it. He says, quote, I love Brady, but if he had focused on his wife more than football, he'd have a wife right now.
He ain't right. He ain't wrong. To be fair, though, it's nothing Tom hasn't already heard. I mean, he stood up on the stage and got roasted pretty harshly.
Yeah,
so
it was a tough one.
You know?
That was right after
that kind of all happened.
Yeah,
so
he had a rough go there. Yeah. And she just, his ex-wife Giselle just had a baby with her jiu-jitsu coach.
That's a sore spot.
Good for you, Tom.
Yeah.
Well done, buddy. Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure his ownership in the Raiders and the tens of millions of dollars he's making on Fox and all the hundreds of million dollars that he's worth and all the things. I'm sure. And I'm sure he's not doing too terribly bad with the ladies, but unfortunately, your ex-wife, the mother of most of your children, not all of
most
them,
of, yeah,
most of your
you
children, is
well done
having a baby with a jiu-jitsu coach. Good for you, Tom. A jiu-jitsu coach that she was in a relationship with before your divorce was final.
While you were married. It's true.
Tough one there.
She left him. Or left you for him.
Yeah. Somebody said, damn, Brady got roasted pretty bad. He did. He did.
He got roasted pretty harshly about that already.
If
so
you haven't, if you
new.
Haven't watched The Roast of Tom Brady on Netflix, I would urge you to.
Brutal.
It's pretty good. I will admit Gronk and Randy aren't that good, but Edelman does a good job. And then of course they had like actual comedian presenters on there that were good. Bledsoe was good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. The 913 says, I probably would have done the same thing for my younger brother, to be honest, though. Oh, yeah, for sure. That's a lot of us, right?
It is a bit hypocritical of Tom Brady, you know?
Oh, for sure, man. Dude, I'm sorry. You know, he's focused on this woman that he's in love with rather than football. Dude, you sacrificed your children for a sub 500 year that didn't end up in the postseason.
Yeah.
Well done, Tom. Hey,
probably the last
priorities, buddy.
Right?
Good work.
Yeah.
All right. All right. That's
that was fun.
That's
that was
enough.
Fun.
That's enough talking about Tom Brady for tonight's show. We got a lot more to get to here. Some more NFL news, big news out of the NBA, and unfortunate news. We're talking about Netflix and the roast of Tom Brady. Bad news if you're a fan of the Last Chance U documentary series, if you're hoping for another season. I'm not sure it's coming. We'll talk about all that coming up here on the other side of the break. This is After Hours. Logan Weber and Julio Sanchez on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.